for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Gordon Green's latest film, Prince Avalanche, Paul Rudd and Emil Hirsch play two road workers who've been hired to repaint the lines and install new reflectors on a highway that's been ravaged by a wildfire. They don't have much in common and struggle to get along, living almost entirely in isolation in the Texas woods. Prince Avalanche won Best Director at this year's Berlin International Film Festival. It opens tonight at the IFC Center and at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and I'm very pleased that it brings David Gordon Green, Emil Hirsch, and Paul Rudd to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
David, isn't this based loosely on an Icelandic film called Either Way?
It is. It is. I saw this film last year, and it really just struck me as a great nuanced character piece, and I got really inspired by it initially, and then I thought, well, why not just remake it? I can get a couple of great actors and roll my sleeves up and do something very personal with it.
And the fact that it has just a small cast appeal to you?
Yeah, you know, there can be a great joy in the filmmaking process. I say can be. Often it's really burdened with logistics and a lot of the personalities and efforts that can get in the way between a filmmaker in the filmmaking process and the pleasures of it. But in this one, we really wanted to strip away all of as many of the burdens of filmmaking, so that it could just really thrive as a great duo character piece between Paul and Emil.
So you had to locate a place that had a serious forest fire.
Yeah, and actually, I had found the park in Bastrop, about an hour outside of Austin, Texas, where I live, and that was what inspired me to start searching for a story. I found the place before I found the Icelandic film.
So you were thinking, I got to make some movie here.
It was. It was just in the aftermath of this major catastrophic wildfire that swept through Texas. It was a very beautiful and haunting landscape, and I was really fascinated by the rebirth and wanted to capture it on film.
Well, does the bleakness of the landscape kind of reflect the moods of these two guys who are out there in the wilderness?
It does, and it kind of contrasts some of the comedic efforts of the film, and so we really use that as a third character and a melancholy umbrella.
Paul, your character, Alvin, likes the solitude of camping out, working outside, being far away from civilization, but he does have some eccentric quirks.
Yeah, he has a few, and he does like the solitude. I don't know if he understands exactly what it is, though, that he likes about it. You know, I think there's also aspects of his personality and he's running away from some things.
He tends to be a loner and justifies it intellectually.
That's right.
He writes letters to his girlfriend, and there's something old-fashioned about them. And he's kind of old-fashioned himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this movie is set in 1988, and it's not. It isn't a period piece in that it. You know, we're wearing crazy 80s fashion or lampooning anything, but one of the. I think the main reason is that there were no cell phones, mm-hmm. and we're out in this kind of barren landscape, and if you want to make a phone call, you have to drive to town. So, yeah, letters are the way to go.
Although, even today, you can be in many parts of the country, especially in forests, and not be able to make a cell phone call.
Well, part of the idea was just to isolate these guys and set them aside from technology and all the devices, and we really didn't want to reference any option these guys might have to Skype their loved ones or anything, and really use the sentiment and romantic notion of handwritten letters, which is a dying art form for sure.
Emil, your character Alvin, your character is hired by Alvin to work with him because he's his girlfriend's brother. What does Lance think of working out there in the middle of nowhere?
Well, Lance, ooh, wow, the sound of my voice in this microphone. I'm very smooth right now.
You're thinking of going into radio as a second career?
WNYC, everybody.
You've got it down.
Yeah, all things are considered. Lance is a very, goofy guy who's a little bit immature, and he's probably been trying to party with all the 21-year-olds for, 6 or 7 years past his due date, you could say. And, he's 27 years old, and he's still essentially a bit of a man boy who loves the nightlife, loves the city, and, you know, finds himself a little bit at odds with Alvin and the environment that he is in, which is, you know, nature.
Well, the two characters are very different. We realize that from the start. Lance comes across as all id, while Alvin is totally superego. Mm. Did you think of it in those terms?
In the, like, oral to anal sense?
Yeah, well, that's another way of describing it.
The Freudian connections?
My mind is racing right now.
No. I mean, like, no. I mean, I think that there was definitely that kind of subtext going on of, you know, he's very brash and he, you know, tries to provoke Alvin constantly.
Well, you were in the film Into the Wild, which was about finding solitude, separating from civilization. Is there any of that character, Chris McCandless, in Lance?
Not a lot. I think that was one of the things I relished in playing Lance was just, you know, Into the Wild, Chris McCandless, he's so self-sufficient, he's so mature, he's so poised in a lot of ways. And it was kind of liberating getting to play Lance because he just has the opposite opinion of nature. He just wants to go home. He doesn't want to be alone. He likes the city. And I found that kind of funny in itself.
Well, neither of the – what these two characters do have in common is that neither of them seem to be very confident. Yeah, but what, David, did you see them as id and superego when you were writing it?
That's definitely, you know, we were really trying to construct something that had on the surface level a very obvious odd couple dynamic. And I think the second anyone is strange enough to cast both Paul and Emil in the same film, you're already working in a great step forward in that dynamic. So we really wanted to have guys that on the surface do kind of contrast each other. And then the more you start to get to know them, the more you peel back the layers of who they really are and see the mask that each of them are wearing. And I find that as strange an entity as these two guys can be when they get together, they slowly start to find similarities or complementary qualities of the other. I think there's a lot of Alvin that Lance really respects, and then there's a lot of Lance that starts to kind of, you know, emerge out of Alvin. So I looked at it as a character piece where two very different people can start to find the similarities, much as I think two cultures kind of colliding can find reflections of themselves.
Did you write it with Paul and Emil in mind?
I didn't, but I wrote it with kind of broad archetypes in mind, and very quickly thought of Paul, and then was careful not to cast a comedic type opposite Paul, so that people didn't get the wrong idea. I wanted to shoot for an actor that had great dramatic strengths, and then I know as the listeners are finding out that Emil has a very odd, strange sense of humor, and that hasn't really been reflected that much in film, and so I thought it'd be a great idea. Or a great tool for me to tap into some of that and then really get these guys at each other's throats a little bit.
Paul, did people automatically assume that if you're in a film, it's going to be a comedy?
I'm finding that, yeah. There are laughs in this movie. I mean, I think it's very funny, but it's poignant and it's dramatic. And I've noticed that sometimes in things that I've done in the past, in the marketing of it, I can see the thought process behind it where it's being marketed as a broad comedy because that's what I've had some success in the last few years. And it can be a little frustrating, I think, maybe for some people who might go thinking it's one thing and then they feel like they've been sold a false bill of goods.
On the other hand, for you as an actor, this is a chance to show that you can do other things.
Well, it was one of the – I mean, I've always wanted to work with – David, and we've known each other for a while, but the idea that we could kind of go out into the woods and do something that was artistically fulfilling, not feel beholden to a studio or not feel beholden to any kind of expectation of what an audience might expect from me or from him, and yeah, it was great.
I misspoke before. The film doesn't open tonight. It opens a week from today at the theaters that I mentioned, the IFC Center and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and it has brought Paul Rudd and Emil Hirsch, its stars, and its writer-director David Gordon Green to our show. The film is called Prince Avalanche. Ed, you talked about having to go into town to make a telephone call. Lance goes to town for the weekend. He's looking forward to hooking up with a girl, going out dancing. But Alvin decides to stay in the woods. Mm-hmm. He could go make a telephone call.
Yeah. But Alvin likes his solitude.
Now, did you improvise during the scenes you were there? There's a dance that you do when you're fishing. Was that in the script?
No. That most of that sequence where I am kind of on my own, you know, we had some just things that we were like, all right, we're going to do something here. Let's see what it is. And certain things would inform other things. While there was a script and we adhered to it, you know, there were certain things, such as there's a woman in the film, a woman named Joyce, who is looking through her home that had burned down. And
it's a four-character film.
That's right.
She's the third character.
Right.
We'll talk about the fourth one in a little while.
Well, you know, that she was not an actress. She lived there, and that was her house. And I think it's one of the more powerful scenes in the film. And I'm asking her about her house, and she's giving me a tour. And she was telling me, and everything she said was, you know, what she was feeling. And then we incorporated that into the film, and then she became a character in the film.
So when you bumped into this woman while you were filming, you realized that you could add this to the script. What was going to be there instead?
Well, there we were actually location scouting for one of the locations of a home that had been destroyed in the fire, and one of my producers, Craig Zobel, and my assistant director, Attila, had gone to the other side of the forest to look and see what kind of homes they could find that might be potential locations, and they had met Joyce looking through her the ashes of her home and started speaking with her about the experience, and they called me up and said, we found a great location, sure, but more than that, we found a very special character at a very vulnerable moment in her life, and we might want to consider the idea of turning a camera on the event. And it was so successful, finding a woman that was so fragile and so open to sharing her vulnerability in this moment with Paul on film, that we wove her into the narrative of the film, and she ended up becoming a very striking and pivotal dramatic element of the film.
Well, it's very affecting when she talks about having lost everything, all the records of her life.
Yeah, and then the scene that follows that, where I'm exploring a house on my own and kind of recreating a domestic scene, that wasn't scripted either, exactly what I would be doing, but it came on the heels of shooting that scene with Joyce, and so we're able to kind of improvise and kind of go with it when working on something like this.
Now, the audience hasn't seen the film yet, but these are ways, David, of revealing that Alvin's character isn't 100% the healthiest person in the world. You try to walk a thin line between him being perhaps the person the audience might identify with in a lot of ways, and somebody who we realize has some serious issues. He takes pills, he talks to himself,
yeah,
he fantasizes.
The idea, and one of the things I'm most proud of in terms of casting Paul is you cast a guy that people find so relatable and find him very endearing, and I love that, and I love his comedic work, and it was a way that we could invite audiences into this emotional experience with a man that's dealing with his own very intimate issues and really kind of I look at it as a coming of age film for his character in a lot of ways.
Emil, what attracted you to the role?
Well, I had always wanted to work with David for a really long time, and like David said earlier, and Paul as well, and like David said earlier, there is a side to me that is a little bit more comedic, and most of the acting jobs I've gotten in the past are, by and large, for the most part, very straightforward
and often dark,
and often pretty dark kind of work. So it was really a pleasure to get to play someone that was a little bit lighter at times, that I still felt like I could do make a character. You know,
you were on the show many years ago when you were still a kid actor.
Yeah.
So how did you go from being that innocent kid actor to the guy who was in so many dark roles?
I think that, I don't know, perhaps just the way I look and the way my voice sounds, you know, that even that has something to do with it, you know. And I think a lot of the roles that I've been attracted to, I couldn't really tell you exactly why I've been attracted to them or why they've fit for me. I look at a part like this, though, and you know, there's moments where Lance has some dark beats, but he's a very kind of an innocent guy in a lot of ways, and kind of a bit of a schlub at times. But I found you know, the characters seem to have on the page a lot of heart and a lot of ultimately good intentions, which I really liked. I like that aspect of the character.
My guests are Emil Hirsch and Paul Rudd and David Gordon Green. We're talking about their film Prince Avalanche, which opens next Friday at the IFC Center and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. And we'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with David Gordon Green, who has written and directed a film called Prince Avalanche that opens next Friday at the IFC Center and the Lincoln Plaza Cinema. It won a Best Director Award at the Berlin Festival this year. You have to feel good about that. Also with him are the two stars of the film, pretty much the major characters. They make up about 98% of they're on the screen about 98% of the time, Paul Rudd and Emil Hirsch. Have you ever won an award like that before?
No, that was the first big international award that I've been fortunate enough to receive, and it was really great to see not only that the film was embraced by festival audiences, but international audiences, and see that the film translates, because we made it from a very, very personal, intimate place, and wanted to make sure that it satisfied and fulfilled all of our artistic goals. And then to see that be embraced by an audience is really rewarding.
Right now, one of the things that's being said about American films is that they are explosion heavy because they were films relying so much on the international market. So is it a surprise that a film like this, which is based so much on character, do as well as it did?
What I found really refreshing about the production, and I think what audiences are going to find refreshing about the film, is that it is – 99% of the movie is just a character film, and although it's R-rated, it's a little misleading. There's no profanity, there's no bad language, violence.
Why is
sex,
it R-rated?
Nudity, because of some of the discussions are about relationships, and I guess some of those relationships maybe seem provocative to some audiences, but there's not a cuss word in the film.
Well, you could have cut out some of those discussions and had a lot of murders, and you would have gotten a PG-13.
Yeah, the only way that this film is explosion heavy is because explosions in the sky did the sound of the score.
Way to work. That was really nicely done.
Thank you.
But I think it is in a summer where there's so many of these 2.5-hour epic, destructive, chaotic blockbuster films coming out, some of which to the detriment of the box office. This is a movie about two people getting to know each other, dealing with their relationships back home, and encountering a couple of mystical characters on the way.
The fourth character in the film is a truck driver who drives by a few times. He's played by Lance LeGault, who's really great in the role. Can you talk about him and the scenes with him?
Absolutely. Lance was a larger-than-life character actor, and we were really fortunate enough to know him. He passed away shortly after we filmed the movie, and so he never got a chance to see it. But it was really a wonderful swan song to a man that's made us laugh and been very scary, terrifying in movies and TV shows, a great character actor, but also had an amazing musical career. He played with Elvis for years and was in a number of his films, and his records are still available and worth tracking down if you're a fan or new to the world of Lance LeGault.
And he gives these two characters some advice.
I kind of look at him as the Yoda of this film, the old wizened guy that just gives him, instead of teaching him about the Force, he hands him a bottle of moonshine and says, "Loosen up, little kid."
Do people still make moonshine liquor in the backwoods of Texas?
I had a couple of sips a couple of weeks ago, yeah. they do. It is still a thriving industry, and it's some strange and interesting and often beautiful characters that you'll meet that are out there brewing.
Now, Paul, you've been in a lot of movies over your career in a wide range of roles. Did this movie feel at times more like a play because it was only a four-character thing?
Not really. I tend not to separate them too much. I mean, I'm kind of just focusing on the character and then the other characters and then the story at hand. it felt like the movie that we were making. Yet there is something very theatrical about it. And in fact, when I saw it the first time, I couldn't help but think of Beckett and Waiting for Godot, which has some similarities.
Were you thinking along those lines?
Yeah, and we discussed that. You know, I think there's a mystical quality to it, a sense of absurdity to it, and also kind of a poignant symbolic illustration of humanity in there. And I think there's complicated layers if you want to find those, and there's an obvious kind of charming relationship film if you want to see it on the surface.
Well, Emil, they sing a song. Did you make up that song?
Bad Connection. Paul and I together, the Bad Connection, the phrase comes from our sound guy. He wrote on one of his walkies, he wrote Bad Connection. And David locked onto this phrase, so he said, okay, we want to make the theme of this song Bad Connection. So Paul and I together, we just started kind of singing and just made up all the lyrics, right? I mean,
yeah.
And that probably makes it feel funnier than if it had been something that had been prepared. You really do feel that there's a spontaneity to it.
I love it, and the harmony is a little imperfect, but but it was, I think we did two takes of it, and the second one felt like a gold record. So we said, let's call it a day and put some music on top of it, and it really amplifies that moment from being just soulful conversation and dialogue to a scene of kind of a cathartic scene between the two characters.
Well, they sing it when they're drunk.
Yeah, well, that helped too.
Now, have you done this much improvising, allowed this much in your previous films? Is that something you like to do?
I always use it as a tool. In films, very often you can find yourself locked into a script and feel a little claustrophobic within it. So I like to loosen it up and bring ideas to the table. And this film was an opportunity where sometimes we did take those chances and those detours. But at the same time, there would be a 6-minute monologue that Emil's character would give that would be highly memorized and very structured. So we kind of went back and forth. Whenever we'd need it to loosen up and feel the imperfections of human performance, we'd improvise. And whenever we wanted something a little bit more precise, we'd get back to the script.
There's really a 6-minute monologue?
More or less. I mean, that story you tell with a little bit of interaction from Alvin is...
Yeah.
Without a lot of cuts. So that was really...
I just treated
delivering a long monologue.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of just treated it as such. I just made sure that I was prepared on the day and, ready to go, you could say. It was certainly a lot of fun to do. It was just, he's essentially just telling a story about what he did over the weekend, and it kind of goes into some ridiculous places.
My guests are Emil Hirsch and Paul Rudd, the two stars of a new film by David Gordon Green called Prince Avalanche, which opens next week, a week from today, at the IFC Center and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Have you done much theater, Emil?
You know, when I was a kid, when I first started acting, 8 and 9 years old, I did Midsummer Night's Dream as a summer camp. In Topanga Canyon, California. It was like a theater camp. Yeah, well, we did the play. You know, I was outside on stage, so that's the closest I've been to doing a play. I did a reading of a play a couple of years ago on Broadway. It was just where we were all just sitting on the stage and doing it.
But mostly TV to start off.
Yeah, most television and then film work. But I'm interested in doing a play. It just sounds a lot harder.
Well, what about you, Paul? We saw you on Broadway last year in Grace.
Yeah, I live in New York. I've lived here for 18 years, and the main reason I moved here was to do theater. And I've always been interested in trying to do all of it, movies and plays.
So you were in 3 Days of Rain with Julia Roberts and Bradley Cooper. You starred in 2 Neil LaBute plays. Mm-hmm. Obviously playing nasty characters.
Well, one was a little nastier than the other.
And then Twelfth Night at Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
So you're going to come back to the stage anytime soon?
I don't know. I mean, I hope to. I certainly like doing it, but it's exhausting. And the schedule I found, especially in this last one I did, the one day off a week is just a killer.
Especially when Wednesdays
and Saturdays
you're doing two shows.
Yeah.
And wasn't there a part of the play where you have to perform everything backwards?
Yeah, there was in this show, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is a a unique experience. And it's also, I think, the best way, I kind of thought this in my 20s too, the best way to learn, just because you have to do it over and over again. You have to learn how to recreate moments and relax. And so it's still the best thing I think an actor can do.
Emil, you've played the activist Cleve Jones in Milk, and then you played Chris McCandless in Into the Wild. They're both based on real people. Is preparing for that kind of role different from the way you prepare for a role like this?
I think so. For me, you know, when you play a real-life person, there's a lot to draw from. You know, you can talk to, and in the case of playing Cleve Jones in Milk, I was able to literally talk to Cleve, hang out with Cleve, talk to people who knew Cleve, see video footage of Cleve, and actually had Cleve play his own part and just videotaped it and just watched how he would actually play in all of his scenes. So that was definitely not on the table with this particular situation. So I think sometimes when you're playing characters that, you know, the fictional characters, there's a little bit more creative leeway, and it's more up to the actor to kind of just define what qualities or particular things the character or vibe should be. But David was pretty specific, I think, for the most part, about what he wanted.
Well, David, you and Paul both have a Judd Apatow connection, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, I had made four very dramatic, independent-minded films early in my career and had the itch to break into more commercial comedic material just as an exercise, just to do something different and see if I could do it. And really, to the great credit of Judd Apatow and Amy Pascal at Sony, they took a huge leap with me and gave me the role of a lifetime as the director of Pineapple Express, which seemed like a very unlikely fit. And I'm always a guy that goes against the odds and tries to get what he wants. And I was just really thankful to have that opportunity and work with Judd.
Well, it has to be a real I don't know, culture clash experience, because when you're making small films, you're working with limited equipment. Suddenly you're doing this big budget film and they give you all the toys you could ever want.
Yeah, you know, every movie I look at is like there's never enough time and never enough money, and you go in there with an intimate group of friends. I was lucky to keep a lot of my collaborators in that transition from small films to large films. So it was a great education for us all, and we were lucky enough to work with some really smart, top-notch, top-of-the-line, very experienced technicians.
Well, Paul, you are best known for your comedies, Anchorman, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, This Is 40, Admission, just recently with Tina Fey. Are you being typecast, or do you prefer to do comedic roles?
Well, you know, I think maybe recently I'm feeling that a little bit, but the movies that I've worked on in the last several years, namely these comedies, have been fun to make. I really like them. I like the people that have been involved. And so I haven't made a very concerted effort to try and play a serial killer in a really dark role because the last one was a comedy. That seemed disingenuous for me at those times. But I also
would you want to play a serial killer?
Sure, if it was a funny serial killer, of course. I think, you know, I want to play any part that somehow speaks to me and doesn't, you know, and means something to me, and it's something I feel like I could do something with or relate to the character in some way. I tend to, I don't really separate comedy and drama as much, maybe, as some other people.
Well, in this film, you still get to do something you did in a number of those other films, because you've been pretty good in drunk scenes. This Is 40, Knocked Up.
Mm-hmm. It does seem to be a running theme.
Are they fun to do?
They're hard. It's hard to play drunk. Albert Finney was always the best. He seemed like, I always just thought, like, that guy, maybe he was just really drunk. But
because the tendency is to start exaggerating. And well, drunks try everything possible to not look like they're drunk.
Absolutely. That's just it, yeah. If you're drunk, you try and act like you're not.
You have another film project in the works, Emil?
After I'd finished Prince Avalanche, I worked on a film called Lone Survivor, which is based on the book by Marcus Luttrell about a Navy SEAL mission in 2005 in Afghanistan, and kind of how these four SEALs went on a recon thing and got ambushed.
So you play a nice guy.
Play a pretty intense guy, real-life Navy SEAL named Danny Dietz.
And, David, I forgot to mention, you've also directed for television, the HBO series Eastbound and Down. Is working in television very different?
Not in the way that we go about it. You know, we're fortunate enough to work with HBO, and my collaborators, Danny McBride and Jody Hill, and the gang that we work with really approach it cinematically and make it as movie-like as it can. Even the narrative is every one episode leads to another, so that the season feels like, you know, kind of like a short miniseries.
Now, that movie that you were in, Emil, was that the one that was directed by Peter Berg?
Yeah.
The music in this film is by David Wingo, but also Explosions in the Sky.
Yeah, who also did Lone Survivor. Yeah.
And they did Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, yeah. I love Explosions in the Sky. And the music work that they did in Prince Avalanche is just transcendent. It's like hypnotic or something.
David, who decides who's going to provide the music for a film like this?
Well, in this case, it was a lot of the idea, the concept of even making the film. I credit to the band. The drummer Chris Raske is the one that first took me out to the park and told me of it. And he said, "Go out, you know, you got to go out to Bastrop and make a movie here. This is an amazing landscape." And then, in speaking with the other members of the band over the pre-production period, we very quickly realized this was going to be an ideal collaboration. Also with my frequent collaborator David Wingo, who I grew up with, and it was an unusual experience in that the band was on set very frequently, and we were all working through the editing process to their original music, and we had them as a great resource, and were able to expand some of their signature to include vocals and clarinets and beatboxing and some unusual instrumentation.
Do you still live in Austin, Texas?
I do.
Do you feel like an alien when you leave town? The rest of Texas?
I feel like an alien when I wake up every morning, wherever I am.
I want to thank you all for being on our show. David Gordon Green, writer-director of Prince Avalanche, which opens next week at the IFC Center in Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and its two stars, Emil Hirsch and Paul Rudd. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.